May it please the court. It was kind of odd to be back on a day when you have Vaca, what I was involved with, and Chesterfield, which I was involved with, but I wasn't involved with this case until recently. I have with me Richard Rubin from the law school at Mizzou, who actually was the counsel at the trial level for Ms. Henderson. I brought with me to the podium three things: a statute, a constitutional provision, and a rule, and would like to comment about each of those. The statute first, 512.020, any party to a suit aggrieved by a judgment of any trial court in any civil cause may take his or her appeal to a court having appellate jurisdiction. We're only here because Ms. Henderson wants to do what the statute says that she can do and has not been able to do. The constitutional provision, Article 5, Section 4, the Supreme Court shall have general superintending control over all courts and tribunals. The Supreme Court and District Court of Appeals may issue and determine original remedial writs. We are here invoking the court's authority to superintend, in this instance, the Boone County Circuit Court, which so far has not acted to allow Ms. Henderson to vindicate her statutory right. And then the Rule 6706. On sustaining a motion to dismiss a claim, counterclaim or cross-claim, and that happened here, there was a motion to dismiss. The motion was sustained. The court shall freely give leave to amend and shall specify the time within which the amendment shall be made or amended pleading filed. That didn't happen here. It's not something that Ms. Henderson could do. It's not something Mr. Rubin could do for her. It is something that the circuit court was required to do. And
she sought leave to amend?
No, she did not seek leave to amend. And this rule doesn't ask for whether she seeks to leave to amend. There's no reason here for her to seek leave to amend because an amendment would have been futile for two reasons. One of those is that this judge said, I don't have subject matter jurisdiction. Now, that's wrong. She has subject matter jurisdiction, but she said, I don't have subject matter jurisdiction. And that's not something that could be solved through an amendment.
Respondent says in the respondent's brief that she indicated in open court that she could, that refiling the action would not have been futile and in fact was available to her.
Well, I think that counsel may have said something like that at some point in one of the early proceedings here, and that may have been inadvertent. It may have been that he hadn't had a chance to look at it yet, but it doesn't matter now, because by the time they were back before Judge Aysel, counsel said, look, we can't do that. Number one, it's futile because you said we don't have jurisdiction. And number two, we brought an election contest, and you have to do that within 30 days. The 30 days are long since expired, had been expired by the time it was originally dismissed. And so there is no ability to amend, which means then that this next section of 6706, that is, if you don't come back in time, that part doesn't have any meaning in this case. But the last part does. Final judgment with dismissal of prejudice shall be entered on motion. And that's what Judge Aysel is refusing to do, refusing to enter a final judgment, which is required for this particular plaintiff to be able to come to any appellate court.
Well, but isn't there a difference? Because Judge Aysel says in her briefs that she did not think it was with prejudice, and simply because someone wants a judgment entered with prejudice, the court isn't obligated to do that. So can, because what the claim is failing to issue a final judgment as opposed to failing to issue a final judgment with prejudice, is it not?
So then we've got Ms. Henderson between a rock and a hard place.
Well, she can come to the court and say, even though it says that, it actually is prejudicial. It is with a final judgment because it resolves the matter and cannot be replaced.
And she did try to come to this court.
But she didn't have the final judgment.
But you're right. At that point, she did not have and still does not have.
Well, that's my question. My question
is,
isn't the proper relief to require a final judgment as opposed to require a final judgment with prejudice?
That would be fine, as long as it is a judgment that is final so she can appeal it. We're beyond the point that it matters whether it says with or without prejudice, but it still matters that there is a final judgment that says judgment that is in a writing signed by a judge, because until she has that, she can't go to a court and have an appellate court and have that appellate court decide whether there is subject matter jurisdiction over her particular claim.
Other than a voluntary dismissal prior to the trial or introduction of evidence, do you know of any way to end a lawsuit without a judgment?
No. It just sits.
So does Judge Azel think this lawsuit is over?
I can't tell.
One way to tell is to see if anything is happening.
Well, nothing's happening.
Or if anything is being planned or...
Nothing is happening. If we can tell that way, then Judge Azel must think that it is over. But it makes some sense that she would have thought it was over at the beginning of this process, maybe the first time that Mr. Rubin went to the Court of Appeals and then came to this court and tried to proceed. And then he went back and said, please enter a final judgment, and she said no. So I don't understand how at that point she could think it was over when she's still being asked to perform the last task, which is enter a final judgment. It says judgment, it's in writing, it's signed by a judge. And so
she could think we were wrong and think it's still appealable.
She could be, and then she would just be wrong. Because this court has been very clear, it has to be in writing, it has to be signed by a judge, and it has to have the word judgment.
Because in the brief in this case, the respondent alleges that a final judgment was entered.
Yes, and but note the cases that respondent lists to say that. They are cases in which at least the word judgment does appear. And here, the word judgment does not appear.
She has still not entered a document that says judgment
no,
on it.
No, it doesn't say summary judgment.
Does she explain why she won't put the word judgment on her final resolution of the case?
Not to Mr. Rubin. Not in open court. She has not explained why she won't do that. I know that the respondent wants to have us wants to say that you have to strictly construe this the mandamus standard. This court, of course, doesn't always worry about the label. Mr. Sternberg pointed out that there is an old writ that you could ask for to make a judge act on. I didn't even know that. But I think that this court's superintending power is not limited by the peculiarities of the common law writ of mandamus.
Is it important in raising my first question about with or without prejudice? Is it clear from what was filed before her that you just want it to say judgment, or do all your pleadings say you want it to be a judgment with prejudice?
I don't recall.
Because if, in fact, all you ask for is a judgment with prejudice and she's not compelled to order it with prejudice, has she erred by not entering it to say judgment when she doesn't think you're entitled to have it without prejudice?
I do not recall the specifics of what she was asked.
But I thought you read to us a rule that said if you don't amend, she has to enter judgment one way or the other. That's her obligation.
Well, I think the rule says that final judgment of dismissal with prejudice shall be entered. If this proceeds the way the rule contemplates, there would be a final judgment of dismissal with prejudice.
When you refuse to amend without prejudice.
When you refuse to amend. That's what the rule instructs to have happen. And Mr. Rubin says that they simply asked for a judgment. And didn't make the specification whether it's with or without prejudice.
So are you saying that what you think she needs to do then is just sign a document, entitle it judgment, but she does not have to say with prejudice?
It wouldn't matter at this point because it is with prejudice whether she says it or not, because we are out of time to be able to refile an election contest in this case. So the distinction doesn't make any difference at this stage. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chief Justice. May it please the court.
Yes, you may proceed.
Good afternoon. I'm Caleb Colbert. I'm here on behalf of the respondent and the defendants in the underlying action. First, I want to say, you know, as a young lawyer, it is an honor and privilege to be here this afternoon. I thank you for your time and attention. I do want to start off with addressing Rule 67.06. I agree with some of the questions that were raised earlier. 67.06 only applies if there is a request to amend the petition. In fact, 67.06 is entitled Failure to Amend. Essentially, 67.06 is designed to address the situation where there is a pleading deficiency, there's a failure to state a claim, and the petitioner or the plaintiff in the case requests an opportunity to amend the petition, then the judge in that case is obligated to give them an opportunity to do so. That doesn't apply here. What rule does apply is Rule 67.03. 67.03 is entitled Involuntary Dismissal and Effect Thereof. First line of the rule indicates a defendant may move for an involuntary dismissal of the civil action for lack of jurisdiction, for prematurity of the action, for failure to substitute a party for a decedent, and for such other dismissals as are allowed by these rules. And then the end of that rule provides any involuntary dismissal shall be without prejudice unless the court in its order for dismissal shall otherwise provide.
But you haven't entered, she hasn't entered a judgment at all, with or without. You can't appeal without a judgment. We sent it back because there wasn't a document entitled judgment. Why hasn't Judge Azel entered a document saying judgment, whatever else it says?
So I think there was some confusion. The notice of intent to appeal actually was an appeal from the original denial of a motion to modify. There are two motions to modify filed in this case. The first one was similar to the one that we're here arguing about today, but the first motion to modify was referenced in the notice of appeal. And in Judge Azel's view, that appeal was dismissed without an instruction to modify or change her ruling on the denial of that original motion to modify. So I think
But that's not the question. She denied something that apparently was intended to resolve the claim that they brought, right?
Sure. Yes.
That's called a judgment. That's what does that. And she never entered a judgment.
She entered an order of dismissal.
Right. There's no such thing. An order of dismissal is a judgment. And that's one of the collateral problems with doing that is that it leaves her without a way of appealing. But that's not the purpose.
Well, I think Judge Azel looked at the timeliness of the motion as well, because
it doesn't matter if she denied it because she didn't like the way he's dressed. Denying it is resolving the claim, and that's what judgments do.
Well, unless there was something else that the judge or the court was looking for to be alleged in the petition. Is there something that could have been alleged in the petition that wasn't alleged and the judge was trying to force the petitioner to do that could be considered reasonable, to allege at least?
Not that I'm aware of. In my view, the motion to dismiss was based on a lack of statutory authority, which deprived the court of jurisdiction to hear the election contest.
So Ms. Henderson could not have alleged anything that would have given the court authority to hear the case?
In my view, no, but counsel for Ms. Henderson indicated that that was an option available to them at the hearing.
Well, whatever they first alleged, clearly later they did not allege that, but the court has still refused to enter a document called judgment. I'm not understanding why.
Well, in the hearing on the motion to modify, she looked at the timeliness of the motion. In fact, she said, this is an election contest, and I've heard the hearings, I've heard the motions on an expedited basis. I've done everything I can to move this forward as quickly as possible. The motion to modify was filed 4 months after the original
order.
And
she said you lose. Okay. But why hasn't she entered a judgment?
Because she feels like that was the judgment.
I understand, but our rules say you have to say judgment. Why? And we remanded it because there was nothing called judgment. Our rule says to end the case, you have to enter something called judgment. Otherwise, it's still pending, so they can't get review. Why won't she enter something called judgment?
You
have a legal reason why she's not doing that, and she doesn't need to do that.
Well, the doctrine
can it just pen forever with if she doesn't want to enter that?
Well, so there are two arguments that we've raised in our brief that do address that to some extent. The doctrine of latches and the lack of standing at this point.
No standing to seek an order in their own case?
Well, at this point, I don't think there's any dispute that the contestant in the election contest has moved out of the jurisdiction. And so in an election contest, if the remedy is we're setting aside the original election and we're ordering a new election, she's not able to vote in that new election. So if the test for standing is having an issue that...
But they get to appeal that, and that may be 100% right. The judge's order may be 100% right, but they're saying we get to have it. We're entitled under the law to have that review, even if they're going to lose out of hand. And they can't do it without a document called judgment.
But the standing issue can be raised at any time, and that can be used to prevent an appeal.
But they brought the case, so they're entitled to a judgment in their case.
Sure, but
they may lose, but and the judgment might say you lose because you have no standing. But they're entitled to a judgment saying that, aren't they?
Well, but standing is an issue that can be raised. Standing and mootness are an issue that can be raised at any point in time.
And you can lose on standing if you don't have it, but not until you lose. They haven't lost yet because there's no judgment. It's still a pending case.
I acknowledge that there is no document that is entitled judgment in the case.
But what is still pending? What is the judge must have a reason, I'm sure, for not entering a document called judgment. What is that reason?
I think the reason is that there is, on the basis of the motions that have been presented, the motions are untimely. We had the sales tax election that went into effect on April 1, 2016.
On the merits that they lose.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
You're very welcome. You're very welcome. Again, so we also believe that in the mandamus action, latches is another consideration for the court to factor into its analysis. And the Lowry case that we cited in our brief is instructive. In that case, the underlying action was dismissed in May. The petition for writ of mandamus was filed in December, so 6 months, the six-month window. And in that case, the court ultimately found that mandamus was not appropriate, not a proper mechanism, because there was a change in the position of the parties in that six-month window. The assets at issue had been distributed to third parties. So the court said, even though it was only 6 months, we're not going to allow the mandamus proceeding to occur because of the doctrine of latches. And when you look at the delays that have occurred in this case, the same is true. In fact, there are several events of delay from our view that impacted this case and justified the application of latches. First, as I mentioned earlier, of course, the election contest was dismissed on March 8th, 2016. The first time that the relator raised any issue with the form of the judgment was in the motion to modify filed July 28th, 2016. In the intervening time, she'd made a strategic decision. She filed a petition for writ of prohibition in the Court of Appeals, which was denied. She filed a petition for writ of prohibition in this court, which was denied. All of that happened, and she could have been raising issues with the form of the order of dismissal. She could have been bringing that back to the court's attention, to the trial court's attention, but she didn't. Instead, she made a strategic decision to pursue other avenues. So that's the first delay event that justifies the application of latches. The other events, if you fast forward in time, on December 22nd, 2016, her direct appeal was dismissed by this court. The next action in the case was 6 months later. There is nothing that happened in the court in the case for that 6 months. And so we asked earlier what Judge Azel was waiting on, what if things were happening. There were 6 months where nothing happened. Similarly, on July 19th, 2017, relator's writ proceeding in the Western District Court of Appeals was denied. The next action in the case, again, 6 months later, when this proceeding was filed on December 29th, 2017. So collectively, you have well over a year of delays where nothing is happening in the case, and which would lead Judge Azel to believe that the case is over. She's intended it to be over.
There's discussion in the briefs as to whether or not Judge Azel's obligation to enter a final judgment in a case that she believes is over is an act in which she can exercise discretion, or does a trial judge have a ministerial duty to enter a final judgment when the proceedings are concluded?
I believe it is a discretionary decision, and I base that belief on Rule 7406, which is actually discussed in the prior case. 7406 applies by definition to relief from judgment or order. It's not limited to a judgment. It reflects and relies on orders as well. And 7406B, again, indicates that if you're seeking relief from a final judgment or an order, that you have an obligation.
But they're not seeking relief from one. They're seeking entry of one.
But they're seeking relief from the original order.
No, they're not. They're seeking entry of a final judgment so then they can appeal it. They're not seeking relief from it because it's not been entered yet.
Well, I think that what they are seeking relief in connection with that.
They're seeking to get a final judgment so they can appeal it. That's different than seeking relief, which is once something's final and disposed of.
Well, I think, but they're seeking relief in the form that they want the format of that order to be changed. They want it to be nominated.
No, it's not a judgment
well,
yet.
Here, maybe this is. Would we have to reverse all these cases where we've said to be appealable, it has to be a judgment in order to follow your construction of that rule?
I don't believe so, because there's a time limit included in 74.06B. which indicates that a motion seeking relief from an order has to be filed within a reasonable time and no less than the 1 year on some of the subsections. And here the motion's clearly filed outside of the 4 months, and for the reasons I mentioned earlier, we believe that's unreasonable. I mean, essentially there has to be some outer limit on the time frame if the case is still pending. How long does it remain pending?
Exactly.
Indefinitely?
30 days.
And that's why the doctrine of latches applies, because at some point there has to be a cutoff.
Only after the case is over. How does the case end?
Well, the case can't go on indefinitely. I mean,
right. It has to end somehow.
If there's an order of dismissal and the parties believe the case is over and everyone is acting as if the case is over, then...
Well, the appellate court said it wasn't over.
I understand. But at some point... the doctrine of latches is going to apply again in a mandamus proceeding to cut off that.
Does
outer
that
time.
Make sense that that's good policy?
No, I don't think it does.
I mean, the policy is, do we want cases to remain pending in perpetuity because someone didn't ask that there be a final judgment at the end of the case fast enough?
Right. I think you want finality. I mean, again, that was an issue discussed in an earlier case today.
So let's put it in a little different context. Let's say that it's one of these administrative suspension cases, and rather than ask for a judgment, I ask the court for a permanent injunction to prohibit the Director of Revenue from suspending my license. And the Director of Revenue appeals that, and the Court of Appeals says, not a judgment, they send it back. And the judge says, well, it's an order, that's my order, and I'm not going to do anything. Does the driver just win? Do they just win because they got an order that no court of appeals will entertain because it doesn't say judgment?
No, I think you have to put it in context of the time and the issue at dispute. You know, again, here we have an election contest that, as they've said in their brief, has a 30-day statute of limitations.
Well, let's regardless of the reason that the trial judge might be wrong, let's say that there's a specific statute that doesn't permit a trial judge to enter that type of order under any circumstances, but the driver got one anyway. Are you just saying that there are some orders for which courts of appeals just do not have to resolve?
I believe that's the case. I mean, as an appeal is a statutory right. There's no inherent right to an appeal, right? I mean, the idea is the right to an appeal, the right to appellate review has to be based on a statute or a rule somewhere. Mm-hmm. And
it's certainly better policy if you are wrong to never get a judgment, right? I mean, you'd sure want an order that resolved the case. If you thought you had pulled the wool over on the judge, you certainly would want an order as opposed to a judgment.
And in the
if
text,
your interpretation of this is correct,
and
it's a win you can keep for sure.
In the context of this case, Judge Azel did dismiss the cause in its entirety. I mean, that was the language that she included.
But she didn't.
Well, in my hypothetical, the judge gave the driver a permanent license. What's the difference?
Well, it goes to the issue of the policy of when do you know something is over, and clearly from Judge Azel's order, I mean, it's over.
Even if that is a matter of law, it's not over.
Well,
maybe what you're saying is that we ought to overrule the cases that say that it has to say judgment, and all it has to do is, in effect, end the lawsuit.
Well, I'm not saying that we have to overrule
but
all those cases.
But you are, because there's a lot of cases that say you have to say judgment.
But in this particular case, what makes this different is it's an order that clearly says it disposed it.
You know, we had a ton of those before, and people were always confused. Is it final? Is it not? Did they mean this? So we adopted this rule that said you got to say the word judgment. That's the only way we can know. If you don't do that, it's not over.
I completely understand it. I see I'm out of time, but I'd be happy to answer any other questions.
Thank you.
All right, thank you.
Unless there are further questions, I have nothing to add.